This meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:36 p.m. on Tuesday, March 28th. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Flom, Representative Ortez, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Edgman, Co-Chair Foster, myself, Co-Chair Johnson. Assisting us today, we have the LIO moderators, Jake Wade, and our Finance Secretary, Leah Frazier. This afternoon, the committee will continue to hear amendments on HB 39 and HB 41, the FY 24 operating and mental health budgets. Do we have any questions before we begin? Seeing none, we will brings us back to our amendment that we were working on, but we do have, I think we have Representative Kronk that would like to speak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to rescind my conceptual amendment to Amendment 64.
All right. Thank you very much. That brings us back to Amendment number 64. Without an amendment. Representative Colomb.
I would like to make a conceptual amendment to change the 50 back down to $10,000.
To how much?
Ten.
$10,000 conceptual amendment to change that from $50,000 to $10,000. Is there any objection?
Object for the purposes of discussion.
All right, there's an objection for purposes of discussion. Representative Stapp, would you like to speak to your objection?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a quick question for the sponsor. I guess for me, I have no idea what a sign costs for DNR, so I don't see any issue. I would just like to know how much the sign costs. I don't know if you can, you know, maybe a contingency language in the amendment to tell me what the actual sign costs to do this, and that's it. I don't know if the sponsor knows that.
Can I respond? Yeah, obviously I don't have the itemized list of signage costs, but I would say that the signage needed is minimal, but it needs to be official DNR signage. And so what I was thinking, the $10,000, if it doesn't make it, the municipality can pitch in the rest of the money.
With that, Madam Chair, I withdraw my objection.
Representative Foster.
Yes, Madam Chair, just objecting for the purposes of just adding on the question of what the cost of a sign is. For me, the $10,000 is definitely much better than the $50,000. And if it ends up being less than $10,000, then my intent would be that the remaining funds be lapsed back to the general fund and not being used for other purposes, which I think that would be the standard way that this would be handled. So I'm okay with this conceptual amendment. Thank you. And I remove my objection.
All right. Thank you, Representative Foster. Seeing any additional discussion on the conceptual amendment number one to amendment number 64, seeing none, and the objection has been raised that we have adopted conceptual amendment number one without objection. That brings us back to amendment number 64 with as amended. That motion has been made, it has been spoken to, and there's been some discussion. Is there any additional member discussion on this amendment? Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. While I agree with this, I per se don't have the dog in the fight here. I just voted no on some really important things that are really important to me, and I just don't feel that I can support it at any cost at this point, when knowing that I voted against some amendments prior that were really important amendments to a lot of Alaskans. So I'll be a no. Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to echo Representative Kronk's comments. I think if it's the will of the members from Anchorage to do this, I will effectively vote yes, but I don't really have a say in the argument, I think. So I'd be happy to hear from the Anchorage reps, if possible.
Representative Colomb.
Thank you, Chair. So this has public, the state lands involved in it. And so that's why it's complicated. This is a public lake that has been viewed as a private lake for a long time, but it's not private, it's public. And so once that came out clear from the municipality that's public lake, people started to access it, and it's gotten really, in some cases, really dangerous. People are fighting with each other, and homeowners are yelling at people. And I just think the signage and the clear signage where the easement is tells the public where they can go, and can keep the residents clear on where they people are accessing the lake. And so it's been going on a long time, and I just think because the state land's involved, that's why it's here in the committee.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I don't know a whole lot about this, Representative, but I do, through the chair, want to share that a member who lives, or sorry, pardon me, an Alaskan who lives on the lake has said they've written in that they that this is the long historical problem where the public paid not once but twice for the dam construction of Campbell Creek for the exclusive benefit of private landowners and floatplane owners. So they are they particularly lean in to see some legal publicized public easement to these public waters. Those are the words from the neighbor in or near Campbell Lake.
All right. Any other discussion? Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair, through the chair. So I view this as, I've been following this for quite a few years, and I view this as a public access and for the general purpose. And really, you know, some of the discussions I've heard and the problems caused, I mean, it's really a safety issue, and it really needs to be addressed. I know there's four homeowners that are, you know, definitely more involved than others, but I can't imagine that when they bought their house that those easements weren't clearly represented in their closing documents. And so, you know, I would just like to see this some sort of resolution. I feel this is, I mean, a beginning of a resolution to the problem. And so I'm going to support it. Thanks.
Any other discussion? So I guess I feel that I would like to just put myself on the record. I know that Big Lake has this problem as well with easements. I know there's a number of other lakes that easements may or may not be clearly marked. This seems to be something that's gotten a lot of traction because it's more of a blogger and a former state senator that have been in a dispute more than a public outcry to me. I would feel like we spent way more time on this neighbor-ish type dispute and in the legislature then it doesn't rise. It is a public easement that's not I don't even believe there's anybody that's whether it is or isn't that we have easements all over the place that do not have signs, and I think probably should have signs and probably warrant signs more than this. But how do I know? This is an Anchorage issue. It's become a folk issue. And I happen to actually have since passed away. I know the man that built Campbell Lake. So, I mean, I do have some history and knowledge of the lake. But I think this is, I mean, it's just, it seems this almost embarrassing to me that this is the kind of thing that as a legislator that I'm dealing with $10,000 to resolve, to talk about something when we have a near $1 billion deficit and we have many, many lakes across Alaska just because this is something that's been brought up in over and over in a blog and really become a political clash. So as a legislator, I'm just slightly disturbed that we're even spending time today working on something like this when we have so many other much more important issues before us. No matter how much we want to say this is a public problem that somehow is an example of problems across the state, you know, I guess I'm not aware of them. So that's my piece. And as you might expect, I'm going to be a no vote.
Madam Chair, I think I'm going to join your comments. I think there's merit in the proposal. I get it now. I had it explained to me as I was leaving the committee. I didn't know about this. I haven't followed it on the Landbank blog or anything. You know, I just look at some of the amendments that we spent a lot of time on that we defeated. And seniors and disability services and a bunch of other things because we have a budget crunch. 10 grand is nothing in the grand scheme of billions, but it's symbolic. And I think of a couple places in my district that could use signage right now. And I guess the question before the committee, and again, there is merit to it. I'm not going to deny that. I think it's a public use issue. But do we fund one and not the others at this point? And that's me. That's the big issue. And 10 grand, it's not much. But I think I'm going to pass on this as well. Thank you.
Seeing no additional discussion, that brings us to ask, do you maintain your objection, Representative Foster?
I remove my objection.
Object.
We have an objection. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson? Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
7 yea, 4 nay.
With a vote of 7 yeas and 4 nays, Amendment Number 64 has been adopted. That brings us to Amendment Number 65. And this is an amendment offered by Representative Colom. And would you like to speak to your motion?
Oh, yeah. I move Amendment Number 65.
Object.
Thank you. And now the amendment has been made. There is an objection. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. So this was an attempt to capitalize the fire suppression fund. There's a fund out there to help us with all these wildfire costs, but it's been pretty inactive for a long time. And this was an attempt to kind of get ahead of it before we get hit with a big supplemental. The presentation around the fire suppression department was that the costs are increasing the last 5 years. It's not getting better. It's getting worse. And so I was attempting to capitalize the fund so we wouldn't get hit with a big supplemental next spring. But in light of what's going on with the spring revenue forecast, I'm going to withdraw my amendment.
Thank you. Amendment number 65 has been withdrawn. That brings us to amendment number 66, offered by Representative Colom. Do I have a motion?
I move amendment number 66.
Object.
We do have an objection. Representative Colom, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Sure. This amendment adds some people and some services to the Chugach State Park. So there's been a 47% increase in the public use of the park since 2019, which has increased the need for more frequent maintenance and upkeep of all the park's facilities, but mostly outhouses, parking areas, and trailheads, including snow plowing in the winter months. So this is important to my district. We have several trailheads in my district. I've visited those. They're definitely needing help, the outhouses, the garbage. The park itself has brought in, the general fund receipts have grown 78% between 2018 and 2022, but our budget has stayed flat. So generally, we've generated $1.68 million in general fund receipts, but the operating budget is $1.3 million. And so this is an attempt to kind of make up the difference. It's pretty much what the park is bringing in. and the additional maintenance with people would help the trailheads, especially in Anchorage. But there's also one in Eagle River where they have camp hosts that they don't have any money to pay camp hosts down in the Eagle River campground. So it's tough because we don't have that many access points to the park. We have a lot of road problems and residential neighborhoods because the access are right in the middle of the neighborhoods. And there's actually a proposition in the Muni to address trying to be able to bond for some of those road improvements. But this would actually help the access points. And I just urge your support for this.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I speak in support of this amendment. I know how critical the Chugach State Park is to all of Alaska, and hearing that 47% increase of use is also helping to pay for this, it means a lot to me. I wondered if the sponsor has been given any numbers to know, like, how that balances out. What I'm hearing then is that this wouldn't necessarily be a decrement if the receipts are enough that they would pay for something like this. Is that what I'm hearing? I just wondered if you could fill that in for me.
All right. We'll have that addressed during wrap-up.
Perfect.
Thank you. Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am in support of the amendment. I do have a couple of questions that relate to the funding source, which is the vehicle rental tax. My recollection is that we attempted to pass a bill last year to add into the vehicle rental tax a category of cars that are rented, but we are not collecting vehicle rental tax on, for lack of a better, the Turo tax bill. And I am curious as to whether as a rental mechanism in Alaska has increased, whether our vehicle rental tax fund, which we have used for several years for funding of parks, for I believe it's in the capital budget, using it for ATI, Alaska Travel Industry, whether that fund is growing or whether we are depleting it annually with the things that we're already there for. I absolutely support this. So my question really is about that fund source, its stability, its growth, and sure wish we had the Turo taxes going in there if we were taxing Turo's rental cars. But my understanding is they're a growing segment of our rentals, and don't know if Ledge Finance knows the status of the vehicle rental tax fund.
Anybody's, I don't know. I can't tell you the balance of the fund.
Excuse me. One moment. Do we have other discussion? So we're going to get the balance of the vehicle rental tax fund, but is there any other discussion before we go to find more information? Representative Ortiz?
And just very briefly, I generally support the state backing up the state parks, et cetera, and giving it the resources they need. However, it's a $336,000 amendment, and I very well may vote for it, but again, reflecting on the comments that were just made by the representative to my left, in advancing something like this, one way I remember how we didn't advance certain things which were going to benefit elders, benefit disabled folks, things like that. That's where I have a little bit of hesitation on this, so I just wanted to communicate that. Thank you.
We will now take a brief at ease to get a little more information. Brief at ease. I know that we have Representative Colomb in wrap up, and I believe she has some answers from Ledge Finance.
Yeah, at this time, I'd like to have Ledge Finance come on up.
Representative, everybody's a representative. Mr. Carpenter, if you would like to come forward, please put yourself on the record and let us know what information you have on the vehicle rental tax fund.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Rob Carpenter, not Representative Carpenter, with Legislative Finance. We were doing some digging back there, and the current balance at the moment, given revenue projections for the vehicle rental tax ending FY24, would be about $1.8 million that is available.
Okay.
That's based on revenue projections, though.
Very good. Is there anything additional that anyone would like to ask of Ledge Finance while we have someone at the table? All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for the information. And that looks like it answers that question very well. Would you like to add anything in your wrap-up, Representative Colm?
Not add so much, just reiterate, you know, that the park is generating the receipts. It is bringing money into the state. This is just to help them keep up with the huge 47% increase since COVID. It's been really, really busy, and I appreciate everybody's support on this.
Thank you. And, you know, if you will, don't mind the indulgence, I guess I skipped over Representative Kroc. Would you mind if I let him just say one thing, even though you've done your wrap-up?
Thank you, Madam Coach. I just wanted to chime in. You know, I'm going to support this, and mainly because once COVID hit, it was encouraged everybody to get outside and exercise, and I do believe more and more people are getting outside exercising, and that's good for not only your physical health but your mental health. So I do believe this is, you know, we look at everything we didn't pass, but I do believe this is a really good thing for our health anyway, so I'm going to support this. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Kroc. And Representative Foster, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
All right. We have had an objection removed. Is there any other objections? All right. Seeing no additional objection, amendment number 16 has passed without objection.
67.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm one ahead. I think that was 66 that passed without without objection. That brings us to number 67, which looks very, very similar.
Well, I want to add. I want to double this. No. I'm going to withdraw 67.
All right. Very, very good. Thank you, Representative Josephson. That now brings us to amendment number 68, which is offered by Representative Josephson. May I have a motion?
I move amendment 68.
Object.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. There has been an objection. Would you please tell us about your amendment?
Yes. And I want to reiterate, I've mentioned this sort of before, but how these amendments come to be. We all learn about amendment concepts through the media, through emails, through visits to the office. This was the third category. So the Alaska Fire Standards Council director, I mean, I think there's an office of one person, came to visit, and he told me that they were trying to grow, not just for the sake of growing, but because they were overworked. They were trying to grow in 2017 to, I think, three staff. Instead, Governor Walker cut one. And so, essentially, this is like a volunteer organization where, to hear my guest, Mr. Grimes, describe it, he does his fire duties. He's in management, I believe, on the Kenai. And then he just goes home and he serves the people of Alaska just because he's a really good guy. And here are the kinds of things the Fire Standard Council is supposed to do. It's supposed to establish minimum training and performance standards for certification of fire services personnel. It's supposed to establish minimum fire training curriculum requirements for certification. It's supposed to govern the procedure for certification of fire services training programs.
is supposed to govern the procedure for certification of individuals who meet the established standards. It's supposed to govern the procedure for revocation of a certificate of a person or program. It's supposed to consult and cooperate with municipalities, agencies of the state, and other governmental agencies and universities. It's supposed to employ an administrator and other persons necessary to carry out its duties. Well, it has an administrator, but it doesn't have the other persons. So, Mr. Grimes, I'm sure he's a captain or higher, he notes that the workload includes maintaining a regular review process of the over 25 different professional certifications that the Alaska Fire Council is supposed to oversee. He notes, as I indicated, that instead of gaining a third position in the spring of 17, a full-time administrator's position was eliminated, and their duties were absorbed by the department head of state fire services training. Going on, since then, our ability to meet our mission has been severely compromised. We have lost third-party accreditation on numerous standards due to the inability to keep up revision work within established timelines. And finally, we have lost the trust of our fire service through delayed certification and support of the same. We have lost council members who feel that they are no longer able to accomplish meaningful goals. So here is sort of Exhibit A of what happens when you just cut things. Not you, but we, and you're left with this agency of one that is trying to function in a rather sort of significant way related to who should be a fireman and who shouldn't, and whether standards should change, and who should adopt the standards, who should write the standards, all of these things. So I had, you know, when people like this come into my office, as Mr. Grimes does, and he makes his case, I have like zero reason not to offer this amendment, and I have every reason to offer it, and I hope you'll see it the same way. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Do we have additional discussion on this amendment? Seeing no additional discussion, Representative Foster?
I maintain my objection.
The objection has been maintained. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Edgman? Representative Edgman?
Representative Edgman is not with us.
Oh. Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Four yeas, six nays.
With a vote of four yeas and six nays, Amendment number 68 has not been adopted. That brings us to Amendment number 69. Offered by Representative Josephson. May I have a motion?
I move Amendment 69.
Object.
Thank you. We do have a motion, and we have an objection. Representative Josephson, would you please speak to your amendment?
Yes, I will. So these next two amendments, although not joined, are on a similar subject. And so I think of them as a pair, although they're not a pair. Madam Chair, this all gets fairly confusing, but we have a Alaska Network of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and then we have a Commission on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We fund in part, I'm sure they find other resources, domestic violence shelters. I remember as a prosecutor touring the one in Alaska, and of course I've toured the one in there, at least one in Anchorage. These were, for a time, assisted with their funds by the Victims of Crime Act. I know very little bit about VOCA, except it relates, its funding source relates to white-collar crime. I'm going to guess restitution. Apparently, there hasn't been a lot of that. And so it's been backfilled by two principal sources. One has been $3 million. $3 million from the state, and $3.5 million courtesy, the way it's described is Senator Murkowski. And I bet she has some help with that. I don't, but I'm happy to give her the credit as well. So what this amendment does is it provides some stability for domestic violence shelters by moving this $3 million into the base budget. So when we return in January, there will be a presumption that we could change that these funds remain necessary rather than a battle year after year for them. That's the essence of the amendment. The other thing I would note is we did have, and I want to bring us back to last week, I think I took notes, there were about 120 callers that called in from around the state, and I suspect at least 15, that's a pretty good guess, wanted this amendment. They either wanted this amendment, well, they clearly wanted this, or they wanted, in addition, Amendment 70, which I'll discuss shortly. And I've distributed through staff letters of support. If they don't expressly talk about moving money to the base as this amendment would do, they talk about the criticality of CDVSA funds on a broader basis. I'd ask your support. We're not spending more. We're just giving these people the comfort of knowing we're serious about protecting women and children largely from domestic violence.
All right. Thank you. Do we have any additional discussion? Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to voice my support for this amendment. I had the honor of being able to meet with many who are doing the good work with abused women in Bethel, in Anchorage, in Homer, in Kodiak, in Juneau, and in Dillingham. I went to the facilities and met with the people directly, and I have to say that they were ever so grateful for any support that they got on the federal and state side. And when asked what could be done to help in their work, one of the main things they said was the stability, that if they could have more of sense that they could continue their work and not so much thinking about fundraising, but about doing the good work they're doing. And so with that in mind, I will be supporting this. Thank you.
Representative Colom.
Thank you, Chair. So this $3 million, just to be clear, is already in the budget. We're just changing it from a one-time increment to the base, correct?
Yes.
So, and I just wanted, just for consideration, I do have a bill to try to get more money to CDVSA out of the Restorative Justice Fund. And so if we pass this and my bill passes, we could just switch the funding source so it wouldn't have to come out of UGF. So that's all I had to say.
Thank you, Representative Colom. Is there additional discussion? Seeing no additional, we do have additional discussion, Representative Scapp.
I just wanted to make the comment for the record that just clarifying that this funding is already in FY24's budget. Effectively, the proposal is to make it baked into the base as opposed to money that's already in the budget. So knowing that it's already funded for this particular year, I think it's unwise to consider adding forever liabilities, and I'd be happy to hear Representative Colom's bill when it comes, so I'm going to be a no vote.
Very good. Any additional discussions? Seeing no additional discussion, Representative Foster, is your objection?
The objection is maintained.
Or is the objection still maintained? Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon? Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Edgman? Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
5 yea, 6 nay.
With a vote of 5 yeas and 6 nays, Amendment number 69 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 70, offered by Representative Josephson. Representative Josephson, would you like to make the motion?
Yes, I move amendment 70.
Thank you. Representative Josephson, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, I'll be super fast. So Barbara Stanfill, who runs the Alaska Network, I think I have that right, I said in reviewing all my meeting notes, starting from when we convened, came across my notes with her, I said, Barbara, what do you want? What do you need? She said, I want $3 million moved to the base. I tried that. She said, I need $300,000 for increased utility costs and related costs. And that's what this is about. So I don't know. I think it may have been COVID dollars. Don't make me swear to that. But they received $300,000. And so I'm asking that they receive, again, a one-time increment to pay for utility costs and increases for grantees broadly. That's my motion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, just a slight correction. It's Brenda.
Stanford. Brenda.
Yes. So you might have been talking to the wrong lady.
You know, so if I might, I love Turner Network movies, and Barbara Stanwyck confuses me. So I watch 30s and 40s films. It's a thing that, you know, there'll be a skit about me now. So, yes, it's Brenda Stanfield.
Now that we've got that cleared up.
Yes.
Thank you. All right, is any additional discussion? Seeing no additional discussion, Representative Foster, do you maintain your objection?
The objection is maintained.
Thank you. Well, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
With a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 70 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 71, which is one of the vacant positions, and we will roll amendment number 70 to the bottom of the list. That brings us next to amendment number 72, which is also a vacant position. We will roll amendment number 72 to the bottom of the list. And that next brings us to amendment number 73, offered by Representative Josephson. Do I have a motion?
You don't, because I'm going to withdraw the amendment. Thank you.
Oh, okay, very good. The motion amendment number 73 has been withdrawn. That brings us to the Silvertip Maintenance Station. I would like a brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. We are now at amendment number 74, which is my amendment. And this, I would like to move, I will move amendment number 74.
Object.
Amendment number 74 does not change the funding. I mean, it does not close the station. It makes it a one-time increment so we can revisit it if we, given the state's current revenue forecast, if we completely went under, we will be able to talk about it next year. So this is just an attempt to make it so we revisit these items and don't forget that they're out there. It's not an attempt to stop the maintenance. Of course, we want to make sure. But I do want to keep eyes on things as we go through our process. So that was that's the goal of amendment number 74. And also to receive reports on, what is happening with those particular maintenance stations. Representative Josephson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm, with great respect, I'm going to oppose this only in that, if anything, what I know about state highways, you could write on a napkin. But we're, for the first time in years, building a new road right near the Silvertip Station. So there's more road to plow. There's more road to maintain. And I remember also that the state representative from the Northern Peninsula voiced real concern and was quite vocal about the closure of Silvertip. He and I don't typically work on issues together, but I understood his passion for this, and so I'm going to object.
All right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Any additional discussion? Okay. So, well, just to wrap up, I want to make the reminder that this does not take away funding. It just continues to make it a one-time increment. And if there are additional roads that are built and we need to add to the funding next year, there will be a reminder that we take another look at it. And whether we add or otherwise, this is not an attempt to close down the station. This is an attempt to remind people to take a second look next year to make sure that we're following along on our maintenance station, because at one time, not long ago, the funding for this was withdrawn under the Walker administration. It's an opportunity to take a look again and say, okay, this isn't something that we want to close down, and we want to continue funding. But I don't think this year I've had a chance to dig into the maintenance operation and so on. So this just keeps it on our radar. So for that reason, I'm putting forth amendment number 74, and I would appreciate your support. And that is my wrap up. Representative Foster.
I remove my objection.
All right, seeing no additional.
No, I object.
Did you object? Okay. Representative Josephson has put forward an objection. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
10 yea, 1 nay.
With a vote of 10 yeas and 1 nay, amendment number 74 has been adopted. And with that, I will withdraw amendment number 75. So I will, amendment number 75 has been withdrawn, which brings us to amendment number 76. And I will just brief for a moment while Representative Josephson is offering amendment number 76.
I move amendment 76.
And he's made the motion. Representative Foster?
Object.
We have a motion made and a motion. We have an objection. Representative Josephson, would you like to speak to amendment number 76?
Yes, I've already told you about the napkin on which I could write everything I know about state highways. But let's turn over the napkin to the other side and write a little bit on that side. I grew up in Anchorage, and I've seen tons of snow in my life. It's just Alaska to me. But they say that this year was exceptional. So we had three snow events. I was in town for two of them. I missed the third. They came in short sequence, a week apart, that sort of thing. What happened was real. That is, the school district, and I'd never heard of anything like this, it shut down for six consecutive business days. I think I have that right. And one state road in particular that runs through the heart of my district, the old Seward Highway, was unmanageable. So people couldn't safely egress and ingress into commercial businesses. There were two lanes were reduced to one. Some people blamed the city. Some people blamed the state. The city would plow its part of, for example, Fireweed Lane and then stop because the state apparently owns part of Fireweed Lane. I asked the commissioner when he was sitting here, I said, if you had extra money, could it have been helpful? And his answer, it wasn't long, but he said yes. And so, you know, these are real events. A mayor of New York City famously failed to keep his job when he couldn't plow the streets of New York. And that's not what this is about, but it's about moving merchandise and moving people. And, you know, I have to take the commissioner at his word. So this would allow him to contract out additional resources in the event we have a snowmageddons in the fall and winter coming.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Do we have additional discussion? Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Chair, question for the maker of the amendment. Would this, in the event that, for example, next year Anchorage doesn't have the snow nommies or whatever you call them, what happens with this particular money? Is it put into account to build up over time, or is there a way to prevent the money being spent in other ways? This money is intended to remove snow. Could there be other ways that they could spend the money if they didn't need it to remove snow? And then does it become a part of the budget from here on moving forward as well?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I think I might need a lifeline, but I believe and hope that it would lapse to the general fund, but I can't say definitively that that's so. That would certainly be my intent.
Is that the answer to your question? Is it good enough for Representative Ortiz?
It's as good as it's going to get, I think, but yeah.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, through the chair. Just a little bit of information on this. This was part of my subcommittee, and there was discussion about snowmageddons and other, you know, snowpocalypse events. And, you know, what the commissioners discussed was that although these things happen periodically, it's not something that you would budget for every year with a contingency of it possibly happening. So this wasn't brought up as an ask in the subcommittee, and so I am going to respectfully not support this. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Well, my district includes the famous fireweed, and where we had, unfortunately, a state road backed up to a local road, and they didn't get plowed, and it felt like the businesses were at a standstill. I heard from more business people than I did from parents who couldn't get their kids to school. I think they're both relevant in this case. And if I would love to know a bit more to Representative Ortez's answer related to if this rolls back in. I think that there was another amendment we heard earlier where it did, if it didn't. In other words, the funds couldn't be spent on other things. And if that was the case, this makes sense to me, because when you have to have, if you're in a moment, which we heard from DOT, that they couldn't quickly hire anyone, or nor did they have the equipment to handle an emergency situation in urban Alaska like this. And so they said that they would have been able to contract some of this work out if they had access to the funds. And so to me, this may be an answer, and I will support it. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative Galvin. Repeat. House Finance back on the record. I would like to make note that Legislative Finance would like to weigh in if you would be good with that. Okay, could we have Mr. Carpenter, if you would come forward and speak to this funding or other funding that might accomplish the same goals?
Yes, Madam Chair. Rob Carpenter, Legislative Finance. To the question of would the money lapse at the end of the year? Basically, this is an increment into their base budget, so it would be commingled with all the other M&O money. So it wouldn't be, in the way it's structured now, it wouldn't be necessarily set aside specifically for this action, in other words. However, I will say that there's $12 million. There was $3 million proposed, but now there's $12 million proposed in the governor's capital budget from DOT reapproves for this exact thing. It's for emergency weather and catastrophic events. And that's a lot of money, but I know from experience that we went through it very fast in previous years. It was $3 million a year, roughly. So.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, we have a question from Representative Foster, followed by Representative to Josephson.
Yes, Mr. Carpenter, just in addition, looking at options, if those capital funds were not there, might another option be, this is an event that doesn't happen all the time, this no megadon, and say you just accelerate your spending for the year, which means you'll be short at the end of the year, but you could still ask for a supplemental appropriation. Is that would be another option, is that right? Rather than putting it in the base, this extra money?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, that's correct. They have expenditure authority, and it could be used for emergencies that was earlier in the year that would then could be backfilled later in the year by the legislature.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, for Mr. Carpenter, I'm more intrigued by the reappropriation than this question of supplemental funding. So we have a supplemental budget now that hasn't become law, hasn't left the House. I understand we could backfill and then pay other departmental functions for May and June and they could sort of rob from Peter to pay Paul is sort of the concept I'm getting. But you're telling me that in the capital budget, there is a lot of money for emergency transportation needs that theoretically, if it passes the legislature, will be helpful in circumstances like these? Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Jefferson, exactly. So the last few years they received, the agency was crafty enough to dig up reappropriate money because this has been an issue for them, these emergency weather events. So that would be a number one priority of the agency is to come up with that money and have it set aside for this exact thing. And now it's up to $12 million in the proposed capital budget.
And just as a curiosity follow-up.
Yes.
Through the chair, Mr. Carpenter, you talked about commingling of funds. Would that be true even though the title is contractual plowing assistance for snow removal?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. I mean, the agency could set it aside as a courtesy, but generally when you're adding money to a base budget, you're putting a transaction in there describing the use of the funding, but then it gets commingled into a giant pot, which then has line items which can be moved around, et cetera, as they manage their budget.
Madam Chair, I think I can save the committee some time, and I'm inclined to withdraw the amendment. I would note that my hometown was, I think it's fair to say, paralyzed by storms. There was one person who died effectively from snow load in my district. Two other buildings collapsed, a total of at least three buildings. And I just viewed this as something that humankind could fix with enough resources. But it sounds like at least Mr. Carpenter suggested that we go through that fairly fast, but we've got some coverage if we pass this reapprobe in the coming winter. Does that sound fair?
Through the chair, Representative Justin, yes.
Okay, I move to withdraw the amendment.
Okay, thank you very much. Without objection, then amendment number 76 has been withdrawn. Don't go away, Mr. Carpenter. We have more to come that I would really like to have you explain. My next amendment, which is amendment number 77, which maybe you need some documentation on, but this is the, first of all, I would like to move amendment number 77.
I might object.
But excuse me?
Oh, I thought you just moved it, right?
Yes.
I object.
You object?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. And so this, I have my staff here as well, Ramon Henderson, if you would come forward. And I would like to have you explain what this is. This does make some changes as requested by the Alaska Marine Highway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ron Henderson, staff Representative Johnson, and also with Alexa Painter is online as well as having Rob Carpenter present as well. This amendment simply corrects and properly classifies where the salary adjustments should be placed. It takes the money out of the personal services line item here and puts it into the specific bargaining units that it should be placed in. So all this is doing is taking money out of personal services in this line item, move it into the personal services in the various categories that they should be in based on the bargaining unit, and then also the services. So it's a net zero. There's no reduction from this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz, would you like to have any?
I'll withdraw my objection.
Okay, very good. Okay, with that, no objection. We do not have an objection. Anyone else that would like to object? All right.
I'm going to object just because
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. So I shared some concerns with Rep. Ortiz. So my question is about the commodities line item in the total. I understand that the three bargaining units have their own allocations in the budget. And can you tell me if the commodities of $2.5 million is related to implementation of those bargaining unit agreements, or is it just a commodities increase for AMHS that was put in the wrong place? Because it's under the heading of AMHS salaries.
Rob Carpenter, Ledge Finance, through the chair, Representative Hannon, I believe they took the $10 million increment that was proposed by the governor as one lump sum, and they've broken it up into the three bargaining unit increases plus the cost increase for the system into 2024, which was, I don't know the exact number, but it included a significant amount of fuel for the commodities line.
Thank you. I'll remove my objection. Fuel costs a lot.
All right, very good. Anyone else that would like to object for discussion purposes? Seeing no additional objections, amendment number 77 has passed without objection. Our next item is next two amendments, amendment number 78 and 79 are vacant positions. Those will be rolled to the bottom of our list. And our next item up is amendment number 80, offered by Representative Josephson. Do I have a motion?
Yes, I move amendment 80.
Object.
We have a motion and we have an objection. Representative Josephson, please tell us about your amendment.
Yes. Committee colleagues, you saw this amendment a couple, maybe 3 weeks ago as a committee of the whole. I realize that it's the same 10 of you, and I make 11, of course, and this effort failed, but I thought I would quickly take a second bite of the apple and see if the appetite had changed. So fundamentally, early in the session, we had a PowerPoint, and we saw that the university's Board of Regents in toto wanted something like $100 million more, $90 million more in capital and operating than the governor recommended. And what we have in Amendment 80 is fixed costs. And I think the university's pitch is sort of as follows. It's grateful for the general fund grant that we have put in the budget, but times change, things move along, and there are unavoidable costs they can't stop. And they're asking repeatedly for assistance. So the first component is cybersecurity. There have been a significant increase in cyber attacks targeting higher education, and threatening data privacy and security requirements. That is a $1.3 million item. They would spend money on expansion of the multi-factor authentication. They would add staff to support new research-related data security requirements. They would advance threat hunting and additional detection and response capabilities. They would platform security and access management. And they would establish a formal IT risk management program system-wide. The next thing they report in this category of fixed costs is insurance premiums. That strikes me as sort of a textbook kind of thing that a university can't anticipate is going to change. But they note that 2022 is the second worst lost year in history in the nation. Property carriers are finding that many insureds have underreported replacement values, and they cite a $700,000 hike or spike in insurance premiums. They then, again, under the same amendment, Amendment 80, they talk about student library digital access, $500,000. This is a cumulative budget request, but they've seen reductions in the past in the university's libraries. Staffing is down 30 to 40%. Research databases and scholarly journals are down. They report inflationary fixed costs of 20% from 2017 to 2021. This has resulted in a reduced ability to access current research information, with a negative effect on university research and grant proposals. They need more diverse and inclusive materials. They have increased risk from weak collections that will affect institutional and program accreditation. They report reduced availability due to limited hours of operation and a growing backlog of unprocessed materials, including archival and historical materials. Increased faculty dissatisfaction. So this is the next component. They then have a $520,000 element for shared services. This concerns HR and procurement. I can tell you more about that, but
I'm not going to delve into that too much. And then they report at UAA the need to improve public safety. They want to increase from 13 to 15 their campus security force. They note that the campus police there cover three medical facilities, a large juvenile justice treatment center, a private university, which I assume is APU, federal government facilities, and several K-12 facilities. So that is a summary of what they want in Amendment 80. These are things they, I think, legitimately are reporting are fixed. They can't, this is just the world getting more expensive, either through inflation or technology or insurance, et cetera. I ask for your support for Amendment 80.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. I want to make note that Representative Stutz had joined us, and I don't believe she's here with us anymore. So my apologies, because I did not get to make note of that when she was in the room. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Is there any additional discussion? Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to kind of reiterate the fact that we did discuss all of these items actually in this university subcommittee process. I tend to be very happy with how we resource the University of Alaska system. We made sure that the collective bargaining agreement through the United Academics was funded. The university budget as a whole is increasing this year as opposed to last year. And I think that we might want to explore other ways that we can help mitigate some of these costs. Representative Josephson brought up the insurance, commercial risk insurance costs has increased exponentially for the universities of late. I think the state effectively self-insured its own buildings not too long ago and found that there was a cost-saving reduction in that area. And I think that's something that we as a body should certainly explore. However, I would just like to remind the committee that we know that the university's critical needs are actually on the capital side, and they address that pretty heavily. So my biggest concern is to ensure that the heating system for the University of Alaska Anchorage is going to be able to have the type of funding it needs this year. So I would oppose this amendment only for the purposes I want to try to ensure that we have enough room in our capital budget when we broach that to fix the critical needs of the university system, especially in Anchorage. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to speak in support of this amendment, and while I appreciate the comments that were just made by Representative Stapp, and that the university did receive, you know, they got a bump up in funding this particular year. We all have to remember that that bump up follows several years ago when the grand bargain was made, where they took some significant drastic cuts. So even though we might have bumped up the budget, in reality, we're still not close to where we had once been, where the state was able to support the university system in a much more substantial way. And by doing so, they saw increases in enrollment, increases in opportunities for students across the state to find paths of education that met their needs, causing them more likely to stay in the state. All those kinds of benefits that came when the university was more heavily supported by the state. And so I see this as, you know, it's a significant ask, but at the same time, I see it as an investment, a continued investment in the university system, and it's a recognition that for us to keep our own, for us to be able to train our own workforce, do those kinds of things, that costs money, and it costs, you know, takes investment, and this is just another step in helping the university maybe crawl back to where they once were, let's say 5 to 8 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Representative Galvin.
Thank you very much. With great respect to my colleague from Fairbanks, I'm going to offer that when we are sitting in a situation where the university system at large has is now currently, just from 2019, we're at 20% less dollars investment in our students. This university system produces roughly 60% of our workforce. That's a lot. They do good work there, and it's important work, and I do think that it's critical to have heating systems, absolutely, all in for the deferred maintenance that we need to have done there. But at the same time, I'm going to suggest that we be thinking beyond a year or two, think 3, 5, 7, 10 years, and how much we need the workforce out of this university system, along with the other workforce development we're doing in other parts of our system. And I want to especially keep in mind that if we were to have a responsible dividend, we wouldn't be here having these discussions. I think that there is a place to support our school system and from cradle to career, and this is one important piece of that, especially given the inflationary costs that the university, just like every other department in the state that we have been supporting, and even supporting wage increases everywhere. This is the sort of similar kind of ask, and so I strongly support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional discussion for, does it not look like we have additional discussion for amendment number 80? Representative Foster?
I maintain my objection.
The objection has been maintained. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon? Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
With a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 80 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 81, which is the also offered by Representative Josephson. Do I have a motion?
Yes. Madam Chair, I'm happy to report this is my last amendment. Amendment 81, I move it.
Object.
We have a motion and an objection. Representative Josephson, would you please speak to your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I can read tea leaves quite well, but I want to proceed with this amendment because it's different. And it falls under all the items come from the region's FY24 red budget requests. And what I'm reporting to you as part of this $5.2 million amendment are the items, I believe, that the president highlights as being most of a particular concern. So what does the $5.2 million include? Well, it starts with student support and recruitment retention efforts, $3 million. This is additional student support services to increase financial aid, additional student advising, and more dual credit opportunities. It then goes into program capacity. And here, it indicates the following. It wishes to spend $600,000 for a master's in healthcare management and leadership, maritime training, and stable funding for the preparing indigenous teachers and administrators for Alaska schools. It's called the PTOS program. Continuing, it breaks that down and notes that UAS would receive $247,000 of that $600,000. And indicates as follows. The Preparing Indigenous Teachers and Administrators for Alaska Schools program is a highly successful statewide scholarship program for education degree-seeking junior through graduate-level students. PTOS, this Preparing Indigenous Teachers program, supports culturally related coursework in arts and humanities
for undergraduate students and favorable data related to the Council for the Accreditation of Educator Preparation. And then at the bottom of that part of the Regents Ask, they write as follows. This request for funding will ensure the long-term stability of this highly successful program, addressing a teacher shortage while adding greatly to the number of indigenous teachers and administrators in Alaska and supporting culturally responsive program. And finally, the Regents and the President, I think it's fair to say, seek $1.6 million in faculty capacity. And here is cited as part of that, an important part, the UAF CRCD, which is the College of Rural and Community Development, would receive $500,000 for the Alaska Native Success Initiative faculty hires and student support. Also as part of this, this was designed to increase the number of tenure-track Alaska Native Indigenous faculty and staff to support ANSI. You might ask me what ANSI is, and that's the Alaska Native Success Initiative. Finally, on the subject of faculty capacity, these are UAF dollars, designed to meet its strategic goal of solidifying global leadership in Alaska Native and Indigenous programs. This investment will result in an increased number of tenure-track Alaska Native Indigenous faculty and staff that supports UAS ANSI goal of achieving workforce that reflects the state demographically. So, who am I in this situation? I'm an Anchorage legislator asked by the Regents to be more generous than the administration, with great respect to the administration. This is a fraction of the things they want. They've narrowed it down. I know we brought this before the subcommittee. I know the temperature of the building is the same broadly, but I wanted to present this to you again. I ask your support.
Thank you for that introduction, Representative Josephson. Is there any Representative Foster?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question to the sponsor. I see the agency's University of Alaska allocation is system-wide additions. Transaction detail says developing Alaska's workforce. But because the allocation is system-wide, is there anything that would prevent the university to say, not put it towards the programs that you mentioned, but later on they say, well, we have now found ourselves in more pressing need of putting this money towards covering our insurance or other fixed costs. I mean, is that a possibility? With that, thank you, Madam Chair.
If I might, real fast.
Representative Josephson.
So this, through the chair, this tests my skills, but what I know is that the only way to guarantee that funds will be spent as the legislature wishes is with an appropriation. And so funds could be moved in an allocation. But I would think the university would pay an enormous penalty if the legislature learned that it didn't spend this money the way that it purports to want to spend it.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Is there additional discussion? Seeing none. Representative Foster, is your
objection is maintained?
Objection is maintained. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
With a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, Amendment number 81 has not been adopted. That brings us to Amendment number 82, and that is being offered by Representative Ortiz. Do I have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment number 82.
We do have an objection. Representative Ortiz, would you like to please speak to your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, this amendment provides full funding for the consortium library support, which includes two core statewide library programs: the Statewide Library Electronic Doorway, also known as SLED, and the Alaska Library Catalog, the acronym ALC. Approximately 92% of Alaska's population is served by the ALC, which includes University of Alaska libraries, public libraries, school librarians, museums, and special libraries. It totals more than 90 libraries across the state. Last year, the Alaska Library Catalog recorded over 2 million checkouts and nearly 150,000 online requests for materials. These are some of the, obviously, some of the same libraries that we spoke about with the amendment that we passed yesterday in support of those libraries, that they could receive some of that funding that that amendment spoke to. Fully funding the Alaska Library Catalog now will save us money into the future. If received, they plan to use the funding to offset current mailing cost increases and to license more ebooks, which can be delivered online. It would also upgrade the system software to be more efficient and responsive. These improvements will result in lower mailing and shipping costs going forward. SLED is a statewide web-based service that provides access to hundreds of millions of vetted journal articles and ebooks, online research guides, historical information, access for students to live homework help. That's very much used program across the state, particularly in rural areas. Alaska's digital archives, BrainPop, and much more. I can speak from being a former teacher that the SLED network provided a service called EBSCO, which was, again, vetted, researched, document base where my students could go to find information to help them with their debate cases or their historical papers that they wrote or whatever the topic was. And it's much, much different than just doing a Google search, because Google, you come up with everything. EBSCO, these have been vetted. They're vetted for accuracy and for all kinds of, beneficial things for students to quickly cut to the chase. And it's just a valuable, valuable service. So this $635,000 request is a request, again, to support our statewide library system, to support the system that, we have constituents all across the state that use the benefits and gain from the benefits of SLED and the Alaska Library Catalog. And it's a vote in support of that same system that you voted in support of yesterday. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Ortiz. Is there additional discussion? Representative Foster?
The objection is maintained.
The objection has been maintained. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Edgman? Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
With a vote of 4 yeas and 6 nays, amendment number 82 has not been adopted. I'm sorry, 4-7, did I say 4-2? 4 plus 5 plus 2, that would be 4 plus 7, 4 to 7. So with a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 82 has, 4 to 7 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 83, which appears to be the last amendment, but do not get excited because there's a number of amendments that have been rolled to the bottom. We will take up amendment number 83, and then following amendment number 83, we will take about a 15-minute recess to get all of our a list of our other amendments that we would be taking up and bring those back up. So amendment number 83.
Madam Chair, move number 83.
Thank you. We have a motion made. We have a motion. We have an objection made to the motion. And now I have a request for Representative Galvin. Would you like to please speak to your amendment?
Thank you. This will be very quick. This was an amendment that I put together in support of one of the most important goals of the university, and that's to grow the workforce, where particularly where we have needs in Alaska. And while we know there's been some efforts made, certainly in healthcare and in education, this particular one was to ensure that educators who have chosen to become a teacher would have the support they needed so that when they're doing their practicum, they would have $10,000 for their housing and another $20,000 for their tuition, which they still have to pay, and they couldn't work at the same time as they're doing their practicum working as a teacher. So this is a really important program, and I hope that it grows by leaps and bounds, because I do believe it is one of the most important things that our university system can do within this state, as we know that in 2019, at that time, we had numbers that told us that the 53 school districts, or 54, are regularly spending between $19 and $21 million to recruit from out of Alaska. So there's nothing more important in my mind than our getting ourselves wrapped around growing our own teachers. But sadly, I am going to withdraw this amendment, because I believe it's in the right space to do that, given where we're at. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. Amendment number 83 has been withdrawn. At this time, we will come back and we'll take a recess, and we will come back to address the amendments that have been rolled down to the bottom of the list. We will reconvene at 3:30. House Finance will stand at recess till 3:30. On the record, everyone should have a list of amendments that were rolled to the bottom of the page that looks like this before them. And we have (clears throat) 16 amendments to finish up, and we will start with Amendment number 10 that was offered by Representative Tomaszewski. And this is numbers amendment number 10.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I move amendment 10.
Yeah. Object. All right, we have a motion made. We have an objection. Would you please speak to your amendment number 10, Representative Tomaszewski?
So this is the second position amendment that I have brought forward for deletion. This, as was given to me by Legislative Finance, was a position that has been vacant for over 3 years. And apparently, somewhere the information is crossed, and I did not get proper information on this. And the institution's director's office says this position is filled with an acting incumbent. So I'm just going to speak for a moment on this, in the fact that on one side of this equation, we are getting the information from departments that they have high vacancies, and that they need more money for recruiting to fill these vacancies. And then when we identify vacancies in their department that have been vacant for years, as far as our information goes, they say, oh, wait a minute, that position is actually filled. So I think this is a issue of accounting in some way on vacancies, and we really need to address this issue. And I am going to make it my point to get to the bottom of why these vacancies are brought to us and they are said to be vacant, and we need more money to recruit for them. But at the same time, many of them are already filled. And so that's a problem. I think it's a problem. And I think we should all believe it's a problem, and we need to take care of this. So I am going to respectfully withdraw this amendment, seeing how it is a position that is filled. But I will let you know, you'll probably hear a little bit more on a couple amendments here real quick. So thank you. This amendment is withdrawn.
All right. You can still put your comment on the record if you'd like, Representative Ortiz.
Not a comment, just a question. Okay. Representative Tomaszewski, when a position is unfilled, you say this one hasn't been filled for 3 years. What happens in each case with $168,000? Does that automatically go to the general fund, or is it sucked up into other forms of operations within the Department of Corrections?
That's a great question. And I'm sure it's different in different circumstances, but as far as I know, it can be used for temporary positions, or it can be moved to a different position, or it could be moved for travel expenses. And so as far as I know, it's very difficult to find out where this money has gone. But in some cases, like this one position, I mean, it's $503,000 in my view over the last 3 years that, I can't account for myself. I'm sure it can be accounted for, as they say it's now filled. So I don't know. But that's a problem that we need to figure out.
All right.
Thank you.
And thank you for that question. And I guess I got ahead of myself. I wanted to bring up my staff, Ramon Henderson. I believe he's got a multitude of experience in working as state admin director, as well as working for Tammy Wilson, who did a hero's job looking at positions. So I say that just pointing out the breadth of the experience that he has, and he is going to speak to the vacancies and how vacancies are done. And I should have started out with that, and I got ahead of myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ramon Henderson, for the record, staff to Representative Johnson. The first thing I want to say is I want to clarify that it was not OMB legislative finance that provided the list of the vacancies. That was the Office of Management and Budget, not legislative finance. That report came from OMB. Secondly, I wanted to let you know that OMB did a scrub of looking at all positions. I worked on this during the interim, looking at vacant positions, and OMB did a scrub of having the departments justify any position that had been vacant from 6 months to a year. They had to justify keeping those positions. So I don't know what the result of that was, but I do know that the report that you receive that lists positions vacant for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, that report is not accurate. One thing it doesn't reflect, particularly with respect to Department of Corrections, as it said, it reported that the Deputy Commissioner and Division Operations Manager positions have been open for 3 years or more. And in fact, those positions have been filled for 2 years, both the Deputy Commissioner and the Division Operations Manager, filled for 2 years, but they're in acting status. So when a person is in acting status, it shows up in the report as vacant because they haven't really filled that PCN. So when you're looking at a report that says the position's vacant, it may not necessarily be so, but there are cases where that position is actually vacant. And then in terms of how they use this money that is when they have the vacancy, some of it's a lot in the Department of Corrections, it's used for overtime. They can't fill the positions. They're having people, correctional officers are working overtime, and that's eating up more money because they're having to pay more money than they would have to pay if the position was filled. Then also there are situations when, because they can't fill the position, they take the money from that position and they contract out to have the same services performed that the position is supposed to do. Where I had a problem was is when they take that money that they save for personal services and they use that for other purposes than what the position was supposed to do. So one of the things that OMB has done is they have regenerated a report at the request of the legislature. The legislature is required that the Office of OMB report to them any money that is moved in or out of personal services and what that money is used for. So if they took a transaction and said, well, I'm going to move $100,000 from personal services to contractual services, they have to explain what they use that for in contractual services. And that report is available. It has been submitted to the legislature by the Office of Budget and Management. And then the only other thing, was that during the time period that we've been discussing the vacant positions, departments have been responding and OMB has been gathering information about what the status is of those positions, and they prepared a report that they provided to us just in the last hour or so, and we've met with some of you to provide you with that report so you can get a status of exactly where those positions are. I'm sure that's all I have.
All right, and I do want to allow any members of the committee that would like to ask. Are you good with asking allowing sure. committee members to ask questions? Okay, I don't want to go ahead. I think we had Representative Galvin followed by Representative Josephson.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your synopsis of all of this, and I wondered a couple of things. One is it possible for us to see the same report that I think other committee members maybe have? And secondly, my other question was, it sounds like what you're referring to is good audit work for the OMB to ask for when funding is moved from one place to another. I think that's pretty common. I remember hearing a lot of that around the budget and audit work that where I was participatory or at least watching at school district level. So to me, that seems like a very good, reasonable ask, and I appreciate the work. Thank you.
Yes, through the chair. Yeah, Representative Galvin, yes, we'll get a copy of that report to you immediately. And then in respect to your second observation, I don't think that was being done prior to the legislature asking for that information. So that was a good request by the legislature to have that information reported.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Henderson, if you know, if you don't, I don't blame you. Far from it. You said that that the agencies can use personal services to contract out work. And I guess my question is that just strikes me as something that might be a subject of a collective bargaining agreement. And maybe, you know, there's probably, I can't remember her name, she's the state's chief negotiator. Sheehan. Kate Sheehan might be a good person for me to ask. I don't know if you want to opine on that.
Well, let me, through the chair, Representative Josephson, let's say you have a maintenance worker and you can't get maintenance workers hired, two or three of them. The department may use that money that they have some savings for personal services, to have someone get a contract, to have someone perform the maintenance that you couldn't hire someone to perform.
Seems reasonable.
Thank you. And I think the goal here was to highlight something that's been maybe even ongoing for a while. If there's no additional questions, we do appreciate the input and the exhaustive work in looking into all these positions by number of members and staff. So with that, I guess we went ahead and we did amendment number 10. That brings us to amendment number 11 that is offered by Representative Colomb. May I have a motion?
I move amendment number 11.
Thank you, Representative Colomb.
Object.
We have an objection. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Sure. I won't repeat a lot of what Representative Tomaszewski said, but I felt it important to look at the vacancy rate, especially when I had requested an increase. I wanted to at least look at where we could decrease, and I thought looking at vacancies 4 years or more was reasonable. These are not new vacancies. My list is pretty old. I have got responses from some of the departments, so what I'm going to do on my amendments, I'll go ahead and list. I'll let you know what it's going to remove. I'll give you the response from the department, and then just let you guys decide what you want to do with that. So this one is removing funding for a vacant maintenance specialist for ACC, or Anchorage Correctional Complex. The position is a long-term vacancy, 4 years. The duties of this position have either not been necessary or have been accomplished by other means. The department's budget should reflect its actual needs and how it is accomplishing those, which speaks to what Representative Tomaszewski was saying. We need to know where the money is going. If it's not going to the position, we need better accounting practices. The department said these positions have been under continued recruitment efforts to fill. Costs associated with the vacancies are used to support the security and operational unbudgeted overtime for this institution. Also, emergency contract costs associated with the contracting out for service due to the vacancies. Maintenance positions are being reallocated to a generalist position to assist in preventative maintenance for ACC. These positions are generally easier to fill and appropriate for the maintenance needs within the facility. So that's what they're doing with the money.
Thank you, Representative Colomb.
And so one position.
Yes, this, okay, so this is, so I think this highlights that they are using the money, but not exactly where it's been appropriated to. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Representative Colomb. If I understood you right, as you were explaining what they told you they were doing with the money, I heard recruitment and then used as overtime, and then I heard reallocated to a generalist position. But is the generalist position doing the same work that needs to be done? Is that what I was hearing?
All right. Can I answer?
Representative Colomb.
So through the chair to Representative Galvin. The general position assists in preventative maintenance for ACC. They can help, but from what I can tell what they said, that's not really their main, the time spent.
Would you like follow up?
Yeah, if I may. What I'm trying to understand is if the generalist position pays more, and so they were able to fill that, and if they were getting the generalist position to do preventative work so that they didn't need to have the maintenance work done, does it not take care of the same problem, except maybe at a higher rate? I'm just wondering if that's what your assessment was.
So through the chair, Representative Galvin, those are details that I don't have.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Representative Foster, do you maintain your objection?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection.
Object.
We have an objection. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Representative Kronk.
Pass.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin? No. Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Ortiz?
No.
Representative Colom?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
3 yeas, 8 nays.
With a vote of 3 yeas and 8 nays, amendment number 11 has failed to pass. But I do think that that highlights something. Thank you very much, Representative Colom, for bringing that forward. Next, we have amendment number 12. Representative Colom, offered by Representative Colom, do I have a motion?
Yeah, I move amendment number 12.
Objection.
We do have an objection. Representative Colom, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So this is to delete a vacant Correctional Officer 1 position for 114. This position's been empty for 6 years. The duties of the position have either not been necessary or have not been accomplished by other means. And the department has said that the Lemon Creek position is filled. The employee was placed in an incorrect PCN, and that they will submit the correction. So my question is, they're switching. I don't know what PCN the current officer is in, but if they switch it, does that mean that's vacant? So that's a question I guess I can't answer either. But they are, you know, it looks like they will be submitting the correction. So with that, I feel like maybe I need to withdraw it.
It's your option.
No, I guess I'll keep it. Let me just take a vote.
All right. I think we have a motion. We have made an objection. We do have some further discussion from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I want to just speak in opposition to this motion. I have served on the Corrections Subcommittee for all 5 years that I've been in the legislature, and at no point have we ever thought that we were overstaffed in our corrections institutions. They are tough positions. They're hard to fill. If they're not filled, the money is used to pay overtime, and officers are frequently required to do overtime, creating burnout among the officers who are working. I know that one of the issues when we look at, you know, lay citizens, citizen legislature taking on a complex system of accounting, and we are looking for waste, money that's been hidden away, and I just, again, after looking at the Department of Corrections budgets for 5 years, which is a budget with a lot of complexity to it, I don't find that we have excess money to do the work that Alaska mandates. And in fact, I think we need to have more money serving people. I'd rather we were putting it upstream and preventing people from ending up at the Department of Corrections. But I don't think we can cut corrections officers' positions, even if they're empty. We need to attempt to fill them with permanent full-time people so that the entire staff is not continually overworked and on the verge of collapse. So I oppose this amendment.
So I guess I would like to speak to this just in response. And I know I just want to make note, as since I have worked closely with Representative Colom over the last number of weeks on her, as she's dug into the budget, it's not been with some kind of idea that there's, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse that she's going to find, and she's going to point out all this, you know, all these things that are, you know, happening, these bad actors in the administration. I think I'm interpreting here, but the way I interpret her actions is an attempt to make sure that we're clear on what we are spending our money on. And so if there's a position that's been filled, but it's not obvious that it's been filled, or if it's not been filled, and unfortunately we're going to have to use that money for overtime. Those are good things for us as a legislature to know about, because we may find if we really knew what was happening out there, it might really be a huge eye-opener. Might be exactly what we're saying, that this is a huge eye-opener. We only really have three people that are doing the job of seven. I mean, it very well could be that, and we don't, from the reports that we're given, it's not really obvious to us. And I think I really felt like that was the spirit in which this problem was being brought forward, and that we rolled these to the bottom so we'd be able to have a little bit more of a comprehensive look at them. So I guess just in, I wanted to share my observation and how this goes. And we're going to take a vote on this, but I think it's it's appropriate to have a vote. We have an amendment, and each member can choose to vote as they will. But I wanted to make sure that the motives are clear, that this is an attempt to make government better, not to tag anyone with nefarious dark acts that are happening in the administration. So thank you, Representative Cologne, for bringing it forward and I think highlighting this issue that would help us be better appropriators. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I think it's a good exercise too, but I'm going to come down on the side of really having an incomplete picture in front of me, and I'm going to fall on the side of being the chair of the corrections subcommittee now for quite a few years, of not deleting the vacancy until it can actually be demonstrated to me that it's a true vacancy and it's been sitting there and the money's being shifted around elsewhere within the department. I don't think that's been demonstrated to me yet. So I'm really reluctant to remove a position without knowing that fully.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. I don't see any further discussion. Representative Foster, do you maintain your objection?
It's before he does,
I'm sorry, there is a wrap up. Sorry, I'm sorry, I'm yeah, just all over the place. Thank
I just
you.
Wanted to speak to it one more time. It's definitely not my opinion that corrections has excess money or excess correctional officers. But if this has been open for 6 years, I'm more pointing out maybe the accounting needs to be cleaned up a little bit. That's all I'm getting at. So that was my point, is that we just, for us to really make the best decisions we can, we need to know what's filled, what's not, and where the money's going.
Thank you. All right.
We'll maintain my objection.
Thank you, Representative Foster. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
No.
Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Ortez?
No.
Representative Cologne?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
2 yeas, 9 nays.
With a vote of 3 yeas and 9 nays, Amendment number 12 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 13. And this is an amendment that is offered by Representative Tomaszewski. Do I have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Move Amendment 13.
Object.
We have a motion made and objected to. Representative Tomaszewski, would you please speak to your motion?
So this is the same type of deal, different correctional facility. What the department has brought to me within the last hour is that the position is filled. The employee was placed in incorrect PCN, and the correction will be submitted today. So this, I guess, was just a little bit of a misunderstanding and a problem with the accounting on how these vacancies are being reported, and how we need to work a little better at getting good information. So I respectfully withdraw this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Tomaszewski. Amendment number 28 has been withdrawn. Amendment number 13 has been withdrawn. We have Next up, we have amendment number 28, which is offered by Representative Colomb. And may I have a motion?
I move amendment number
28.
Okay. All right, motion made. We do have an objection. Representative Colomb, would you please speak to your amendment?
Okay, so this one's a little, just got updated on this one. So the amendment says to delete UGF funding associated with a vacant certified nurse aide. It's been vacant for 4 years. The response from the department, this is for the Pioneer Homes. So the response from the department said there was actually two vacancies that have been looked into. They requested to keep one because it's been filled, even though it showed vacancy. And the one here, for 5,700, the 713, they had requested, or they said that I could delete that one, but to keep the other one. So that's basically what this is.
Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. You did not withdraw this. It's not withdrawn.
Yeah.
And
but they said to go ahead and delete the 5,001. They wanted to keep the CNA.
All right. Very good. Thank you for that. Additional discussion, Representative Ortiz.
I'm a little bit confused. So how would $5,700 pay for a vacant certified nurse aide? In other words, I can see why it's vacant if that's all they get.
So to clarify, Chair, can I clarify? So I misunderstood. So it's not deleting the position. It's just taking the UGF funds, which is $5,000 of the position comes from UGF, and so that's what they said was okay to take. Sorry about that. I misunderstood.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I guess this provokes for me a question of where is the rest of the position paid for? Is it out of designated receipts from residents? Secondly, we got this report, and I assume this is the OMB report that was handed to us, that said, not that PCN, take the other PCN. I don't see in the amendment that it speaks to a specific PCN, and I guess I, first year in finance, wanting to know if literally it is a specific PCN that we are deleting $5,000 from, and how that works.
Yes, let's just take a brief.
Okay.
House Bananas, back on the record. Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. So since I got this information a little bit late, I'm going to go ahead and withdraw the amendment just because there's some confusion about it.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. That brings us next to amendment number 29, which is offered by myself. And I am going to withdraw amendment number 29. So amendment number 29 has been withdrawn, which brings us to amendment number 30. That amendment is offered by Representative Cologne. Representative Cologne, do I have a motion?
I move amendment 30.
Object.
Okay, we have a motion made and an objection. Representative, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Can I do a brief at ease?
Excuse me.
Can I do a brief at ease?
Yes, brief at ease. Back on the record, Representative Cologne.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So this is to delete vacant juvenile probation officer one position for $70,000, $70.4. It's been vacant for 4 years. The response that I got, an email from the department, that is, this is a PCN that is slated for deletion. So I thought we could go ahead and move forward if they were already slated.
So did you say there it's actually been put forward as something that is supposed to be deleted?
Yeah, from the department. From Kim Cowell's email, it says it's currently vacant and slated for deletion.
All right, very good. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Representative Coleman and the committee. So this is effectively Juvenile Justice Officer 1. So in my experience as a subcommittee chair, this particular class of stay employee was one of the highest vacancy rates I had ever seen. And the real reason why that position is so vacant is because we effectively don't pay enough to provide this position for the roles. The vacancy rate for this particular job title was 60%+. And it's Juvenile Justice Officer 2s are better, but not that much better. It actually was a topic of our subcommittee. I'm sure Representative Josephson will speak to that. But, you know, in my opinion, it just shows sometimes when you ask someone to do a really hard job, you have to ensure that you pay them adequately. Otherwise, you won't be able to maintain that job. And regarding this specific position, you know, the department has slated this for deletion already and already removed the specific funding for this particular position. But I just wanted to give a little context to the committee as far as the overall picture within the department. Thank you.
Right. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. And I guess my question then comes back to the subcommittee chair, which I hear him saying the money has already been deleted from that department's budget, and that I would interpret that this is a second deletion of that same money. And if that's accurate, then I'm opposed to it.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hannon, that's my understanding as well. It's already been removed from the budget for FY24 by the department.
Representative Cronk?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a quick question. When we talk about just the personal services, $70,000, you know, $7,400, does that include medical benefits?
Yes.
Is that just the salary?
No, it's – oh, go ahead.
I can answer through the chair to Representative Cronk.
Representative
Representative Staff.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Crock. Yeah, it's payroll and benefits, total cost for the cost of the employee.
Thank you.
So, Chair, since, you know, in light of what Representative Staff has said, I can withdraw it. It's already been deleted. My email said slated for deletion, so that's why I kept it. It didn't sound like it had been deleted yet. But.
Yeah, I guess I would like to appreciate this, and I'm not sure we have all the information, so I'm not certain how we would, you know, assure that that was the case. So I will work through our office, and we'll follow up on that and bring it back if we need to. I guess we can bring it up on the floor. So thank you, and I will find out more on that position. So this would be amendment number 30, and that has been withdrawn. Which brings us now to amendment number 33. And amendment number 33, which is is offered by Representative Flom. May I have a motion?
I move amendment number 33.
Object.
We have an objection. Would you please speak to your amendment?
So this is to delete Habitat Biologist 2 position for $98,300. This position has been vacant for 6 years. The information from the department, I think I'll just read it, so I'm not going to interpret it, but it says the Habitat section is currently looking to fill its empty positions. This position included, given the increased amount of permit applications that are anticipated through the funding Congress has recently appropriated for infrastructure projects. An example is the dramatic rise in permits needed for broadband projects that will help connect rural Alaska with stable high-speed internet. Cutting this position, while the section sees increased permitting demands placed upon it, would only hamper its ability to review permit applications in a timely manner. The level of fish habitat permit applications fluctuate depending on the amount of projects whose implementation requires work in resident and andromenous fish streams across the state. Therefore, the habitat section keeps a very modest number within the acceptable amount of MTPCNs available to react to such an occurrence. If we do not employ this strategy and instead wait until alleged session to request these needed positions, we could find ourselves months without the needed personnel to review permit applications. This could only cause delays in the issuance of permits that are required for vital projects across Alaska. So that gives you some background of, you know, how they feel about the position. My feeling is that, I mean, I understand they like the flexibility, but six years is a long time to keep an open position. But I'll leave it to you guys to decide that.
Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam. Do we know where this position's based out of?
I might.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease.
Oh, yeah, gavel.
back on the record. Representative Plum, would you like to finish up to your amendment?
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, I don't have the location. I can't answer Representative Prong's question.
That is, we're working on amendment number
33.
33, okay.
Biologist.
So, Representative Prong, I believe, asked a question as to where the locations or locations were, but we do not have an answer to that. So, would you like us to vote on the amendment, or?
I can withdraw the amendment.
So, with that, I mean, I'm not trying to necessarily talk you into withdrawing it, but if you will, then, well, 33 is been withdrawn. Thank you. That brings us to amendment number 34, offered by Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Tomaszewski, would you like to move your amendment?
Like the past amendments, it was kind of the same deal when I withdraw the amendment.
Amendment number 34 has been withdrawn. Brings us to amendment number 35.
So I move
Representative this is Representative Colom. And do I have a motion or?
I'll make a motion to move amendment 35.
Object.
So this is a four-year vacancy in the governor's house. So with that, I think I'll withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Plum. Our next motion is, or I'm sorry, our next amendment is amendment number 41. Offered by Representative Plum. Representative Colm, would you like to speak to your amendment? Do I have a motion?
I move amendment 41.
Object. Okay.
Do I have a motion and an objection? Would you like to speak to amendment number 41?
So this is to delete a public health nurse 3. This has been vacant for 4 years. This one is a similar situation to the next amendment as well. These funds are being used for nurses to travel back and forth. It's because they can't fill the vacancies. And so since they're using it to provide nurses, I'm going to go ahead and withdraw that.
Do we have a further discussion on amendment number 41? She withdrew. Okay. Sorry. Thank you, Julie. I do appreciate you finding this and bringing this forward. And that brings us to amendment number 42, offered by Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I'd like to move amendment 42.
Object.
Thank you. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. Through the chair, thank you. So these were 5 positions that came to me as being unfilled for more than 3 years. For a total of $2.3 million. And I am going to withdraw this amendment. And at the same time, I will be requesting an audit of these $2.3 million from the department, and we'll have them email to all the members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, the next several are amendment number 42. And this brings us now to amendment number 71.
I move amendment 71.
Right. This amendment was made by Representative Plum. It has been objected to. Representative Plum, would you like to speak to your amendment?
So this is to delete a vacant communications engineer 2 position for $159,500. The position has been vacant for 7 years. DPS has said Alaska Public Safety Communication Services classification has determined the position will be reclassed to a communications engineer 1-2 flex with a modification to adjust class specifications to have the professional license to be desired rather than required. I'm not quite sure what that means, other than they're going to reclassify it so they can try to fill the position. Again, it has been vacant for 7 years.
All right. Thank you. Is there any discussion on amendment number 41? Representative Hannon?
So, Madam Chair, with the explanation given and the OMB narrative, I'm going to oppose this amendment. Because if it's being reclassified, then they're still going to need the money to pay the position. And I have no idea what these communications engineer license is, but I'm going to conclude from the lack of being able to fill it that it's a specialty and the reclassification will make it easier to fill. And I'm going to assume it has to do with that public safety radio communications stuff that we hear about in public safety subcommittee. So I'm going to oppose the amendment.
All right. Any representative staff?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to, I guess, either the sponsor or members of the corrections subcommittee, I'm curious when the department decided that they would ultimately look at reclassing this position. I mean, 7 years is a long time to have a vacancy, and I do believe that that is pretty common to look at repurposing positions for other positions, but I'm curious how long it effectively takes someone, I guess, to notice that, that maybe they should look to reclass a position, if anyone has an answer.
Representative Paul?
Obviously, I don't know the bigger answer to that, but in the response, it does say they will be reclassifying it. So I suspect that my inquiry has caused them to look into reclassifying it.
Back on the record. Breaking news just in. Apparently it takes 3 years to reclassify a position. That's just what I just heard. I just thought got that information, and I could have my staff come up and speak to it, who has just received, I've just received that, if you would like.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, with your permission, could we just maybe call the OMB director up to the Finance Committee? Maybe explain why, unless the information comes from someone else.
Man's back on the record. All right, we are on amendment number 72, and I believe this is, sorry, 71. I shouldn't check off one that I haven't quite finished yet. 71, and which has been offered by Representative Palm. And would you like to go ahead and do a wrap-up or however you would like? I'm sorry, we have a comment or question from Representative Galvin.
Thank you very much. I think this is just more of a comment, Madam Chair. I wanted to express my gratitude for this exercise. I appreciate that we're, you know, looking into long-held positions that somehow have not been filled, and it's a really strange way we, as a state, I suppose, has been doing some of our accounting and auditing. But I wanted to I didn't sit in the subcommittee, and so I don't really know, and it's difficult for me to vote on positively on this because, as far as I know, this may be one of the most important things that we should be having in place. So it's difficult for me to be a yes vote, and so I will be a no vote because I just don't have enough information to put me in the other direction. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Galvin and Representative Klum.
Just for a wrap-up, just I guess just to point out that they've been doing business without it for 7 years. So that's all I got.
Thank you. Would you like to maintain your objection, Representative Foster? Oh, wait. We have a objection from Representative Hannon, I believe. Oh, Josephson. Somebody had an objection. Is that maintained?
Yes.
Okay, we have an objection that has been made and maintained, and we now have a vote to take. So, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
Representative Galvin?
No.
Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Ortiz?
No.
Representative Colomb?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
The vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays. Amendment number 72 has not been adopted.
71.
Huh? 71, okay. Okay, I'm going to, next, we will eventually get to 72. I believe this is the time to do that. Amendment number 72, is being offered by Representative Colomb. Do we have a motion?
I move amendment number 72.
All right, amendment number 72, a motion has been made, an objection has been made, a motion made, an objection made, and would you like to speak to your amendment?
So this deletes vacant corporate income tax auditor 4 position, or $146,000. The position's been vacant for 4 years, and the department... Sorry, I'm reading off my phone because they sent it to me. But they are actively trying to hire for this position. And CIT audit manager has 11 direct employees, so to add on training for multiple new employees is a large lift for one person. And so they have one. The response is we need this position, and they are trying to fill it. But they have not been able to for 4 years.
Sure. Representative Josephson.
A comment on this position. So DNR, Natural Resources, has been described, I think, accurately as the engine room of the state because it generates revenue. This is DOR. I recognize that. But this is an engine room kind of job. An income tax auditor 4 suggests there are 3 classes beneath that. So this is a supremely talented, skilled person who knows about oil and gas taxes in the most complicated regime, I guess, in the country. And
you know, we need to get this right because it issues tens of millions of dollars. That's why I refer to this as similar to an engine room. I look at this and I say, well, here, I can see the problem. You know, you throw out $25,000 for healthcare. That leaves you $120,000. There may be some other odds and ends. This may be a $95,000 a year job. BP would pay this person $200,000. That's the problem, I think. So I think this goes to a recruitment and retention issue, but I think they've got to have the capacity to hire this person when or if someone, for example, someone may leave BP and say, oh, I was a tier two. I want to come back and take advantage of that. That sort of thing could happen. So I oppose the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Any further discussion on amendment number 72? Seeing no additional discussion, Representative Cologne, would you unwrap up?
No, I mean, just to reiterate, it's been vacant for 4 years. Doesn't mean that it's not needed, but I think to Representative Josephson's point, I think there needs to be a change in the salary, but that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Representative Cologne. That brings us to, is the objection still maintained?
Yes.
We have an objection, and that brings us to the vote. Madam Secretary, would you please call roll on amendment number 72?
Representative Galvin?
No.
Representative Hannon?
No.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Ortez?
No.
Representative Cologne?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
5 yeas, 6 nays.
With a vote of 5 yeas and 6 nays, amendment number 72 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 78, which is offered by Representative Cologne. Representative Cologne, do I have a motion on amendment number 78?
I move amendment 78.
Object. Motion has been made, and we have an objection. Representative Cologne, would you like to speak to amendment number 78?
Yeah, sure. I'll just say real quickly, because I've got more information on this vacancy. This was to delete funding for a vacant vessel construction manager. This has been open for 8 years. Not sure what $44,000 is doing there, but I think that's something to highlight. I did get more information about what's happening with this, and so I'm going to go ahead and withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Cologne. Amendment number 78 has been withdrawn. All right, that brings us to amendment number 79, and I believe that honor, which would be the last amendment that I have on my list for this year. Yeah, we have a motion could be made. Representative Tomaszewski.
Move amendment 79.
We have a motion made and an objection. Representative Tomaszewski, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yeah, so this was for a port engineer position that has been vacant for more than 3 years, but I have received information from the department that it is actively recruiting now with the amount of upcoming construction. They tell me this is a critical position for executing grants for the upcoming construction within the Marine Highway, and I respectfully withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Tomaszewski has withdrawn amendment number 79. That concludes the amendments that have been provided on this year's operating budget amendments, and I would like to thank all of you for your serious work and your attention to detail and your work is much appreciated. And until we meet again, which will be soon. Briefings. Back on the record. All right. We have finished up our amendments, and we did have an extra meeting scheduled for tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and I do not believe that we will need that extra time. So we will resume our finance meeting at 1:30 tomorrow. That will be tomorrow, Wednesday, March 29th. 1:30 p.m. And with no further business before the committee, at 4:55, we are adjourned.